They still are, right, but I need to make sure. Decades.
Why is the volume? I don't know why the volume on this is going on.
Check it here first. Yeah, it's there. Yeah.
This is so weird. Oh.
Checked in with one of the leaders of the women's movement, Gloria Steinem.
Yeah.
The author and activist has been fighting for women's rights and social justice issues for more than 40 years. In 1972, she co-founded Ms. Magazine and continues to serve as a consulting editor there. She's written six books, including four bestsellers. Need to Know's correspondent Stacey Tisdale sat down with Gloria Steinem recently to talk about men, women, and power.
Let's time travel. Let's go back to the 1960s. What was in the air that made this such a unique time, and what was on the minds and lips of average Americans?
Well, I think, speaking for myself as an average person at the time, I assumed that you had to get married and you had to have children, otherwise you were a little crazy. So I kept saying, I'm definitely going to do that, just not right now. So if I thought that, I think it probably was the general idea that every person had to live a very similar life. What the women's movement and other social justice movements brought was the whole idea of uniqueness combined with community, but the you didn't have to play a role, you could actually be an individual.
How do you, Gloria Steinem, define feminism?
I'll go with the dictionary. It just means the belief in the full social, economic, political equality of males and females. I would add acting on it as well as believing it. But other than that, I'd go with the dictionary.
What is the women's movement today?
Well, I think we've come through a big consciousness-raising phase in which women realized that we weren't crazy to think there was something wrong with the system. And consciousness goes like the wind. Now we're in a more difficult phase, a slower phase of trying to actually change power structures, the way that political decisions are made, the way that economics operate, the way that families actually do and don't raise children, really the structures of life.
Let's talk about where things stand for women here in the U.S. Today, there are almost as many women as men in the workforce, 47%. But still, we're only earning 80 cents for every dollar that men earn. Back in 1979, it was 62 cents, but it still feels like we should be further along.
Say it again. I want to hear you say it. Come out your mouth.
Well, we have this disparity because women are the cheap labor force on which many things run.
You don't go after my Gloria.
The pink collar ghetto of mostly female jobs are the jobs that we can't outsource. They're the food service and healthcare and office work, and you know they're poorly paid because they are mostly female ghettos.
They're old enough.
So quantity is not quality. You know, just because we have now almost 50% of paid work,
they might be godless. They might be godless, but they are my children.
And the other problem, and now I got a third child looking at you. For the most part, I mean, poor women always have two jobs: one at home and one outside the home. Now,
garbage coming out of his mouth.
Let's talk about the way the pop culture interpreted.
You got that right. You know what?
In spite of her prattling about women not being,
I'm gonna have to call up
compensated.
Well, after a year comes by, we're gonna have to renegotiate. We have to renegotiate. And IRS only goes so far.
Basically, women were told that we could have it all. And then we realized that that wasn't possible. So was our interpretation of the feminist movement wrong?
Well, that wasn't the feminist movement. We never said, I mean, if I had a dollar for every time Ms. Magazine had declared Superwoman dead, I would have a lot of money. The idea that you have to do it all to have it all was two things. It's a culture that didn't want to change. And therefore,
the damage. She has enlightened so many
family structure in this country has been destroyed.
The family structure. How long have you even been in the United States to even know what a family structure is?
Providing you do everything you did before.
The American family structure.
Where do you think that original family structure came from?
Oh, across the boat? Are we going to go there? Are we going to go there across the boat?
Well, I've been there. Have you?
We brought your anger with us. We brought your ignorance with us. We brought all the other isms that came across the boat.
our science and our technology.
I still can't get the oven to work right. How's that for technology?
Well, perhaps you should design and build one.
I think I will.
You can't.
I think I will. I think I will.
I think you won't.
I looked all around for the manuals, and I looked all around for those manuals, and I still can't go in that filthy room of yours, no matter how many times I told you to clean up that room. That room is disgusting, and you won't talk about science.
Well, if that room is disgusting, perhaps you should do your job a little more diligently.
Every time I do, you still, and
no,
you still somehow magically manage to fuck it up all over again.
It's about transforming.
That's what I pay
and
you
making
for.
It better.
Oh, my
you know,
goodness.
If women
may I add that your pay
all
is quite
characteristics
ample.
Of the
you keep on saying it that it's quite ample. Do you even know what you're paying me? And I'm not talking euros or rubles or pesos either.
So
it's the only job I can get right now. You know this whole economy stinks. You always complaining about it all the time.
Always something to blame it on.
That's right.
The economy.
Yes,
if you weren't a part of it.
That's right. I am not part of the economy. I am a victim of the economy, and I'm just trying to survive.
Perhaps you should get a job and become part of the economy.
I do have a job. Guess what my job is? Listen to an English man fuck up and talk shit all day. That's my job. Put that on a resume.
They don't like what they find.
There, as they say, is the door.
There, well, you know what?
On the other side of which is unemployment.
It feels like any
well, you know what?
Almost a targeted
you know what? If I walk out that door, who's going
to
come in and take care of your ass?
Whoever I hire.
Who's
going to
put up with your ass? Nobody. Because once I yep about your ass and once I post on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, nobody will ever want to touch your English ass.
Politics as usual?
Nobody. So you better think your lucky stars and fall down to your knees.
So well, I won't be able to find an eager employee. Is that what you're saying?
You're damn right. I'm what you got.
So Gloria Steinem and her ilk have done their work, have they?
Yes, they have done their work.
Equality now, don't you?
You know what she taught me?
How many
patience. She taught me patience to deal with your ass. That's what she taught me.
Really?
Yeah, she taught me patience.
You don't sound very patient to me.
She taught me strength. She taught me strength not to strangle your ass. That's what she taught me. That's what Gloria taught
me.
God bless Gloria Steinem. God bless Gloria. God bless Gloria Steinem.
Inferior group. You know,
she taught me patience and strength not to kill your ass and bury you in the backyard.
Children running the streets like barbarians.
By declaring reproductive freedom as a fundamental
right.
We
the right to murder your child.
The means of reproduction.
Another way to put it, wouldn't you say?
Radical.
The right to bury your ass in the backyard.
And incidentally, it's the only reasonable way to survive on this planet
way.
Earth, because
as if mankind
whether we can decide
prospered
when
for,
and whether
oh,
to have kids
know.
Is
Gloria Steinem
been
fighting
20,000 generations before she
educated,
came along.
She's been fighting an uphill battle ever since she came out the womb. Ever since her name was, ever since she started speaking her mind and saying what's right.
She seems to be doing all right to me.
No.
PBS.
Well, it's about time they had her on PBS. It's about time we saw someone with some XX chromosomes. On the screen.
To my knowledge, the feminist movement is never
XY
been
took
quiet.
Over and
here's,
shit on everything.
What's happened.
You should know,
I
Mr. XY.
In the beginning,
XY are you breathing? XY are you breathing?
Oh, I don't know.
XY are you talking?
Science.
We were.
Technology, prosperity, capitalism,
but you still love
the greatest engine of mankind's prosperity.
But you still like watching the XX.
You complain.
You still like watching the XX bounce up and down, though, don't you? There's a reason why they call the videos XX.
Then we got a big backlash.
Not X,
and
Y, X.
Part of the genteel part of the back.
That's right. That's right.
Well, it used to be necessary.
You still understand where the yearnings come from.
Succeeded.
You still
the
understand.
So
I do
part
too.
Of the backlash is all the anti-law.
Feeling a little atomistic right now.
I bet you are. I bet you are. I've been warning that in the contract too.
I want you to elaborate on a quote.
No chocolate nookie for you.
You're kind of attractive.
The overall problem.
No chocolate love.
Women are still treated as if they were a
really
subject.
Oh,
sorry. You somehow appeal to my animal nature.
Oh my goodness. I do.
Women are half the human race.
Are the pheromones going
not
on
only
now?
That, but
you want to touch this skin?
This. If you grow up
cocoa butter all over it.
In which
oil.
It's okay for by birth for one group to eat and the other to cook.
I bet you
do. For one to get an education.
I know you've been smelling me every time I walk by you.
For one to get cheap enough, or one to get ordered around, or the other give the orders.
I find it days difficult to walk around you, too.
You can directly predict the amount of democracy in a society by the amount of democracy in the home. You can directly predict the amount of violence in public life or foreign policy.
Whatever happened to that?
Because the woman got to clean it, that's why. So actually, it's
perhaps she should spend a little more time cleaning and a little less time prattling.
Centuries of violence in Ireland.
And yet, who comes sniffing on the door past midnight?
A Catholic and a Protestant woman.
It sure ain't me.
We've had violence in the home too long. We know that that's the source of violence in the street, and no more. The good news about being human is we're adjustable. The bad news is that we're adjustable.
Wiser minds than yours.
So, that, you know, there's just nothing, absolutely nothing, that isn't affected by the female half of the human race as well as the male half.
Glorious.
Stands on stage and reads notes from a card. George and Martha have just engaged in an awful fight with the icon of second wave feminism, Ms. Gloria Steinem. Gloria prattles on for many minutes before George and Martha erupt into a fight. They shout insults at each other, cunt and whore and limp dick and cracker and never, ever the N-word. This is not a play where any characters ever says the N-word, ever. Never, ever. This is not a play where it ever gets that bad. Trust me, I'm liberal and I'm white and I don't want to get my ass whooped by the politically correct establishment.
Fuck the politically correct establishment. I would whoop your ass if you said that word.
Slightly confused but trying to keep it together. You would?
Hell yeah, I would. You think I'm gonna get played by a white girl writer? You think you can pull out all these colored tricks out of your grab bag, add a little pepper, and add a little flavor? You don't know one fucking thing about slavery. You don't know one fucking thing about history.
Well, if we're gonna talk about history.
Could we talk about history? Could you just shut up? Could you just shut up and let the play begin?
The narrator doesn't know that she's lost control of the script she's written. The narrator doesn't know that she's lost control of the characters. She thought this would be some foray into realism, with the dainty English countryside peeking through the mist. She thought she could earn herself some elegance by writing a script about sophisticated people with a simple cast of characters. She thought she'd write a multicultural script, rainbow-colored and glossy. She never thought it would be so brutal. She never thought it would be so ugly. She thought she would write a different story, a better story, where the characters behave like they're supposed to behave.
Martha and narrator take stage. Martha kneels down on all fours, crouched like a dog. The narrator pats her head. Good girl, Martha. You be a good girl.
Oh, yes, Amasa. I be a good girl. I act however you want me to act.
The truth is that Martha is not a dog or a house slave or a stock black character as the narrator might want her to be. Martha is an intelligent woman, and Martha is angry, and George is angry, and the narrator doesn't know who is going to say what next. The narrator doesn't know where this story is going.
I know where this story is going. I do know. What are you saying? Look at the stage. Martha's chuckling and plays flirty on the bed. She is dressed in a long robe. Beneath that is some sort of nightie. George tries to tickle her and grabs her from behind. She escapes his grip. She's faster than George by a lot. But she's also excited by the play of cat and mouse, and she teases him, egging him along.
Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. George, George.
Come on, honey.
Oh, George.
What are you?
George, oh my God, George.
Come here, sweet. I like your hair like that.
Oh my god. Oh my god. Oh my god.
I like it.
I don't.
Oh, but I like.
George tries to run his fingers through her hair. Martha ducks, moves away. She doesn't quite stiffen, but she does not want to be touched like that.
I don't.
Oh, but I like.
No.
Her hand again.
No.
Like, I want to dodge.
No. She ducks again. She's dodging George now.
But it's pretty. No. No, don't.
Oh, honey.
No, do not touch.
Stage goes black.
I thought your dad wasn't a dick. I thought you were lying. When you told me about your dad, I thought you were lying.
You did?
Yeah, I didn't think he was that bad. I thought you were exaggerating or something.
Why would I exaggerate?
I don't know. I didn't think it was intentional. I didn't think you meant to exaggerate. But really, how else could you see him? Children aren't exactly objective observers of parents, you know.
It's interesting that you use the word lie.
You think that means something?
I don't know. Maybe it means you don't trust me.
Hey, I didn't say that.
Well, honey, you do. You do say that when you say that I was lying about my dad being a dick. I don't know if I can do this anymore. I don't know if this is good for us, either of us.
So you're gonna leave me? So you're gonna throw me out?
I didn't say that.
What are you saying then?
I don't know. I need time. I need time to think about this. I need time to think about my dad.
Kay knows that her father is awful, but she can't bring herself to fully believe he's awful. Because if she did, she'd have to revise the narrative that she's long held and long lived by. The narrative that she's had since a child that parents always love children and children love them back. She would have to give up the idea that her family was something that she could believe in, she could trust. She'd have to give up her shallow faith in the bonds of blood. It is impossible to engage without revision. It is impossible to enter the story without revising the story. Kay stalls. She shuffles on stage. Martha swaggers, throws her body on the floor. Kay says, maybe. I don't know. I need time. Martha says, no. Get away from me. Stop. Both submit themselves to other words, other sources of pleasure. Both choose to revise the story, or not, as a way to save themselves, and both will die anyway. They both try to save themselves, and they both will die, like us all. What a silly gesture it is, then, to walk on stage, to call it life.
I wish you'd stop blabbering on and on. I wish you'd just get back to the play.
I am. Give me a second. It's important. I'm talking about you.
Yeah, sure you are. Sure. You're talking about me.
What? You don't believe me? I am writing these asides for you.
Is that what they're called? Asides?
Yes. And they're called asides. And they're thoughtful. And they're important. And I'm doing it for you.
Sure you are. Whatever.
Martha, I'm not joking around. I'm writing in these asides so the play doesn't become some awful romp into blaxploitation. I'm writing them so I can save you from being just another stereotype on stage.
Oh, you can save me, You can save me.
Yes, I can save you. I want to save you. I want to revise the racist propaganda that has infiltrated our age. I want to save us all.
Oh, stupid bitch. You can't save me.
What?
I don't want to be saved.
Huh? What?
I said I don't want to be saved.
I don't believe you.
I don't think there's anything wrong with me. I don't think there's anything wrong with my character.
No, you're wrong.
So you say that you're writing this play for me, and then you tell me what to do and what to think, and now you're telling me that I'm wrong.
Yes.
Oh my God, you don't get it.
Can I continue?
You can continue. You can continue, but I want you to know, and I want the audience to know, that this plate is a total lord load of horse shit. The narrator is tricking you. You are a total fucking liar. You want to write smooth, clean sentences. You want to write with experimentalism. And you want to rack up some street cred with the Marxist hipsters down the street. All while you try to wipe my black ass with a piece of sandpaper and call it a play.
What?
Yes, I said it. I said black ass. And I said wipe. I said what I needed to be said. Now, you can go back to your so-called political play.
Narrator looks at the audience for advice. The audience doesn't say anything. Waits a good long while. I wanted to say something smart. I wanted to say something thoughtful. And now look what you've done. You've ruined it all. You've ruined it all.
Oh my God. Is this for real? Is this for real? What do you want me to do? Do you want me to read your cards? Okay. The revision doesn't make a political gesture because the body itself, it is a political gesture. Revision allows Martha some sort of agency in a story which is otherwise really quite sad. I offer these words to you. I offer the following scene revised in farce for you.
Narrator looks up from her tears and holds up a placard that says scene two.
Scene two.
George, I can't believe that you like my hair like that. I can't believe you like my hair in an afro.
I like the afro.
I like the afro.
Oh my God, George, you said afro. I can't believe you said afro.
George stops, pauses. Confused, quizzical almost. He's taken out of the moment.
Did you find it hot?
Yes, of course. I find it hot.
Martha and George grab each other feverishly. They dry him. George's wires get caught as he tries to make out. The respirator makes a loud honking noise. The narrator periodically says, honk, honk, as George gropes to get out of the wires.
Wait a minute. Honk. Wait a minute. I think honk. There might be a slight issue. Honk,
honk. You're so sexy, George. You are so sexy.
There might be a slight problem. I think I've got...
George gets more tangled as he tries to get out of the tangle of wires. The respirator continues to honk. Time goes on. Honking continues. Martha takes a seat at the edge of the bed, alone, as George finds himself wrapped in a net of wires rolling on the bed. You need to know that this is not a part of the play. This is not a part of the narrative. Nothing like this could ever happen in the context of a feminist play. It's a fictional feminist play. It's a play, all right. It's feminist. Feminist play means that fun gets had only in the context of mutual sex, of true, pure, deep mutual sex. This is not mutual sex.
It isn't?
No, it isn't.
Oh, really?
Did you think it was?
I wasn't sure, honestly.
You weren't sure of what?
I wasn't sure of what was happening.
How could you not be sure of what was happening? How couldn't you be sure?
I wasn't sure. Because I guess.
You guess?
I guess it seemed at points like they were enjoying themselves, you know, mutually.
You think they were enjoying themselves mutually? You think they thought that this was all fun and games. You think this was some sort of multi-orgasmic pleasure trip?
Yes. Yes, I do. I think that is what it's all about.
Well, you're wrong. You're totally wrong, and you're awful because you're wrong.
Here's the point in the story where the narrative gets dull, washed over, where the authorial voice dampens the characters, casts them into a sea of ideology. The narrator fucks it up. The narrator fucks it all up. She's gonna tell you a string of lies, and you can believe them or not, but I hope you disregard them. I hope you disregard them and consider the narrator is really a conniving, awful person.
This is George's fantasy. This whole crazy romp is all in George's head. This is all George's fault. This is all George's story.
Don't listen to her, Kay. You shouldn't listen to her. The narrator would tell you that this is George's fantasy. This isn't a part of the play. The narrator will wield an ideological sledgehammer so as to position herself outside the realm of moral culpability, so as to position herself outside of the text. The narrator will say and do these things to you, literally jumping jacks, if you will, and it's all a massive trick to clean her hands from the very real violence you just saw.
We just saw violence?
You just saw violence. You just saw violence. Did you see violence?
Martha asked the characters, and the characters asked the audience. To be continued.
Did you just see violence?
I don't know. When you think about it now with the whole getting together and the wires, but if it was violence, George wouldn't have said, wait. He wouldn't have said, I almost. You know what I mean? If it was something violent, unless it was her doing something to him.
Maybe it needed a little more violence. Maybe George needed to be a little more forceful at ripping those wires out the way. Maybe he didn't have enough incentive. He was just playing like a dog that'll chase a cat. When he gets the cat cornered, it doesn't really know what to do. I don't know if George could deliver the goods, as it were.
I mean, the most violent part was the narrator, really. But then, I mean, are we just talking about the wires, the getting tangled, or what?
You're talking about whatever you want to talk about.
Oh.
I mean, there's the violence of, like, fuck you, Gloria Steinem.
Right.
But there's the humor of it all. I mean, I was fucking in the corner, like about to pee in my pants. I was laughing so hard. So we also have to be real about that.
Yeah.
Whatever was like really, what was angry between George and Martha was also quite
comical.
Hilarious. Yeah. I mean, I was like, my stomach was like, oh, God. I'm supposed to be professional now? No, I can't.
Well, it was funny when the whole, they were arguing back and forth, and all of a sudden it became this, well, I smell you all the time. What? But it felt natural to go into that whole, I hate you, I love you, I hate you, I like you kind of deal.
Well, I can't, it may sound lame to say, but I don't think they could fight like that if they didn't love each other. All the worst fights I've ever had have been with someone I love. I was with a girl for a year and we never fought. And that relationship was doomed.
I know what you mean.
So what is healthy fighting and what is toxic fighting?
I think healthy fighting is when you're able to agree to disagree, and when you're able to understand where the other person's coming from. But toxic is when you're hitting underneath the belt, hitting underneath the belt, and really saying like, awful things to really hurt the other person. And to win. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and definitely. By any means necessary.
Yeah.
You know, that I think I've seen and I've encountered toxic fighting more with my brothers and sisters than with my partner. Mm. Like with my partner, when we argue, it's kind of a, well, actually I win those, so.
Yeah, toxic fighting, that's the fights I don't win.
I don't think anybody wins in toxic fighting.
I don't know, man. I mean, it's been a long time since a woman's hurled an ashtray at me. And frankly, I kind of miss it.
You can. Well, I got ashtrays outside, so.
God bless.
Yeah,
God bless
sure
you.
We could find one.
Go find one. Absolutely. Absolutely. See, I personally like the argument between Martha and the narrator.
That was my favorite.
That was intense of how Martha can kind of put George to the side and concentrate on the narrator and the play, and Martha seemed very intent on letting the audience know what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like that.
Yeah, well, that was sort of the larger violence going on, like this sort of zoomed out violence. And then you want to zoom in on George and Martha, and that's fine, but that's not really
the story.
The problem. That's just like a symptom of a larger thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. And it just makes me wonder if, because I know Martha and George will probably always fight, get back together, fight, get along. But I wonder if things will come to pass with Martha and the narrator. If, like, things are really going to go down, you know, kind of like it's narrowed going to say one wrong thing, and Martha's just going to, you know, rip her head off.
Yeah.
You know, kind of, I wonder what's going to be like the,
Yeah,
but at the end of the day, Martha can be destroyed with one stroke of the narrator's pen.
Yeah, that's right.
What I got a problem with is it's apparently okay for Martha to say Afro, but George, like, this is not fair.
There's a lot of double standards going on here.
Right?
There's a lot of double standards. And I am interested in Kay's position in the whole story. Kay and Rodney, you know, I'm very interested in where their, you know, their conversation with Dad and the narrator, if they're just as aware of the narrator as Martha is, you know, I think George is kind of in his own holding on world kind of deal, but it makes me wonder the other characters, you know, makes me wonder the other characters, and if the narrator is aware of Kay and Rodney and stuff as much as Martha.
I feel like Kay is so passive, and like I've been thinking, I feel like love and violence are like part of the same, it's like two sides of the same coin.
Mm-hmm.
Like caring about something allows you to become angry about it.
Yeah.
And like this sort of stance of like, you can't hurt me because I don't really have a feeling, is sort of like where it feels like she's occupying, just sort of like, oh, what was it? Oh, really, that happened? It's like none of it's really happening because she's never risking anything.
Mm.
Yeah, she's neutral.
Yeah, but is she really? Because she kind of overreacts. Like, he's just kind of going, well, I thought you were, you know, exaggerating about your dad. And she's like, well, and then she goes right to, well, I don't know if this is going to work. I need time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, whenever someone says they need time, you know, it's a bad sign.
I need time to plan your death. I need time to burn this cake.
Somebody says, I would never want to hurt you.
Oh,
you're just like, oh, here it comes.
Here it comes. Yeah.
So do you think passive people or people who are passive in relationships can't experience love? Is that what you're saying?
Not at all. I mean, the stance internally of like, I think that what it is like a mask. It's like a bandage that's like over the thing, and then if you ripped it off and you saw like how ugly it was underneath it, you're just like, oh, I could just do this thing where I like sort of cover it up, and so I never feel it. Mm-hmm. But once you feel it, you can. It's like Pandora's box, kind of. Like you're like, fuck. Like it's better to just step away. And like that's the thing with Rodney, where it's like once he like sort of lifts the lid, and it's like, oh wait.
she's like, you know what, maybe we shouldn't even do this anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't want to get into it if this is what we're going to have to talk about.
Right. You know what I
mean? So it's almost fear of confrontation, too, then.
Totally. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't think passive people aren't feeling all the same shit aggressive people are. I just think they're uncomfortable with acting on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the metaphor is apt for the wound with the band-aid on it. And if you don't clean that wound, you know, it's not going away just because you're pretending it's not there.
It'll come out.
We've all experienced that.
Yeah, it'll come out in other ways. I think a lot of times it'll just come out in other ways, and all of a sudden that passive person is getting upset over, you know, somebody spilt their soda or something. It's something minute when it's really something bigger than that behind it all.
I think it really, like, in a way, keeps the passive character artificially safe from, you know, having to really look, and just by taking that stance of, like, well, I don't know, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm not sure, was that violent? I don't, you know, it's sort of like this playing dumb that, like, you know, makes it so that you can just continue on and...
blindly.
Yeah, and life is hard, so it's almost like you can really relate to that character because it's almost like too much mm-hmm. to see. And mm-hmm. so, yeah, Kay's interesting. I want to see where she goes.
Mm-hmm. I think the narrator knows more than they're letting on, too. So it just clicked on while we were talking. I was like, the narrator kind of... I don't know. I always felt the narrator, like narrator from other stuff. The narrator kind of always knows the whole story. Always knows the whole story already, and it's just already knows. That's why they're telling the audience. So the narrator already knows what's gonna happen and all that kind of stuff. It's when the characters are attacking her. That's when she's like, wait, well, what?
Right.
You know, kind of deal too.
Give up that control.
Mm-hmm. It's the giving up of the control and stuff, and. I love the deliciousness of the character stepping out of the box of talking to the audience.
Yeah.
I love stuff like that. I love when, you know, when you hear narration or something like that over a song.